Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like history, the visual arts, communications, and comparative religion. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're joined by Arushi Saxena, the founder of the EcMinute Project, an initiative that promotes digital literacy and better forwarding behavior on WhatsApp and beyond. Arushi is also the product marketing manager for misinformation and civic integrity at Twitter, where she works on spreading awareness about platform features designed to minimize the spread of misinformation. And just a note, Arushi is speaking to us today as an active member of the responsible tech movement and is not representing Twitter Inc. in any capacity.
Thank you so much for taking time to speak with us today. I did want to start by asking where you feel the responsibility lies for preventing the spread of misinformation. Does it lie more in the hands of tech companies to try and control it on their own platforms? Or should it be in the hands of citizens, individuals? Should it be regulated by law?
Everyone has a role to play in it. It's like a catch-all answer, but I think it's true. And everyone has a different role to play. And we haven't been great in the past coordinating across sectors. So one of my goals and visions is to get public sector and private sector to talk more about how to prevent the spread of misinformation. But stakeholders such as, you know, you and I, readers, viewers, listeners, we also need to educate the public on the shapes and forms of misinformation, how to identify it, and more importantly, the harms of its spreading, because I think we often don't think about the harms of it, unless it's at the scale of like politics or COVID. But it's not just about politics and COVID. There's a lot of increasing polarization between communities and between different religions and castes in different countries as a result of misinfo spreading. So I think everyone has a role to play, definitely tech platforms, in mitigating the spread of it.
Can I ask, because this came up in a very different context with a program that we did earlier this year, which is the notion that the corporate actors or the large platform developer actors can't necessarily be put in the position of having to try to adjust for these kinds of issues because their primary goal is to make money for their shareholders. This is a guest we had talked to a couple months ago, and he suggested that it was the regulatory environment or the governmental environment or even the supranational government environment that should be responsible for sort of trying to handle these kinds of issues.
I've heard this complaint from people who work in tech companies, which is that we need someone to tell us what to do and what not to do. And even Mark Zuckerberg, I believe, came out with a request for regulation, a call for regulation after the Facebook files were released, because we're finding that tech companies may be well-intended. You know, let's presume that generally they try to act in good faith also because they don't want people dying, but they still don't know where to draw the line. And so they end up making their own internal rules and processes based on the resources and knowledge they have. But now they're just like kind of struggling out there. And so I do think government has a role to play in setting and drawing some lines in partnership with academia, input from advocacy groups, input from companies and input from stakeholders. That's why I feel like people need to be talking to one another. Sectors need to be talking to one another. And I think and I hope slowly that will start happening more.
Do you see it happening now? I mean, are there, say, members of Congress who are being well-informed on these kinds of issues? Because what I learned from social media is that there's a segment of Congress people who are all like, Section 230 all the time, and sort of seem to just be fueling a lot of angst over what is true or who gets to be the arbiter of what is true without coming up with any solutions or really informing themselves well on where that division between free speech and not yelling fire in a theater is.
Yes, I think that topics and ideas have advanced. People are talking about Section 230. Congress people are asking smarter questions in general. But I don't think we have the answer yet. I don't think we're quite there yet. Although I do believe that when it comes to ethical AI, which is another vertical under the responsible tech umbrella, I saw there was a call for submissions for nominees to sit on this ethical AI working group that was part of one of the government agencies. Those are the kinds of working groups that I would love to see for mis- and disinformation as well, because that means that the government is actively and publicly having these sessions with members of the industry and academia. But I know like DOD is doing a lot of work when it comes to disinfo and misinfo, because it also has to do with cyber warfare and cybersecurity.
Section 230, for the listener that might not know what Section 230 is.
It was a broad act that was initially put in place to protect viewers, like minors, from child pornography. Section 230 is part of actually a larger act. But what Section 230 says is that social media companies cannot be held liable for what's published on their platform because they are merely publishers, but it's user-generated content. So what's generated, companies should not be held liable for. And so the debate is, well, if someone's posting misinfo on Twitter or Facebook and it ends up killing people, shouldn't Twitter and Facebook be held liable for it?
And right now, those platforms would not be liable. It would be like if I published an ad in the classified section of the newspaper with a bunch of nonsense in it. It's not the newspaper's fault if people take my nonsense seriously.
Yes, right now they would not be held liable.
And that was part of the 1996 Telecommunications Act?
Yes.
Going back to what you were talking about, that graphic that shows the spectrum of the different kinds of statements that would fall under misinformation, I was struck by it because at one end of the spectrum is political satire. And it's something that I don't think about as misinformation. But of course, you know, every night on every channel, there's a bunch of news clowns making jokes that are not true that get forwarded over and over and over again. And so, yeah, it is misinformation, but that's sort of the end that's protected speech. And then there's like another part that's the stuff out of context. And I've been thinking a lot about some of the political statements I see on Twitter where people will frame something in a certain way. And so they'll only look at the one part of the problem, or they'll try and causally correlate two things that are really disparate or whatever. And so presenting stuff out of context still, to me, would be protected speech. So it just seems like a really slippery slope. So how did you all come up with prompting reflection or prompting users to think twice?
It was something we debated a lot, where it was, do we want to explicitly tell people the harms of it? Because sometimes it's really violent. Like in the case of India, like really violent things happen. In the case of US and some other countries, democratic processes have been altered. Like there's very large scale of impacts that have happened. And when you're bored after dinner, like scrolling on your phone, you don't really want to be consuming those kinds of things. So we had to find a balance between communicating why misinfo is harmful, but also catch people's attention so that they would read the poster and would download it and would want to forward it. It was difficult to reach that balance. So we had some funny ways we tried to do some gotchas. And so one of our forwards was like a fake forward that talks about NASA scientists find that this berry is blah, blah, blah. And so we were like, oh, maybe when someone's bored, they'll click into it. And then through that, we were like, here's why you clicked into it, because it said NASA, who's an authority. Here's why you believed it, because the image was catchy. And so in those small micro ways, we tried to get people's attention.
What's a fake forward?
The counter forwards that she was talking about.
Yeah, the counter forwards.
I do have a question about assessing that reaction from people, because I know a lot of people spent a lot of time during the pandemic trying to argue with other people on the internet who they felt were wrong about things. And it was very mentally and emotionally taxing to do that. And not really budging people on either side. So on an individual level, how should we react when we see something that is somebody's spreading really wrong information, say medical information?
That is a great question, and I appreciate it a lot. The main thing that I keep reading and that I also now believe through my own experimentation is if you see a loved one or someone that's spreading misinfo by accident or potentially questionable information by accident, you don't want to necessarily immediately slap them on the wrist and have them retaliate. What you do is you ask them, oh, that's interesting. What is this article saying and why? And if you ask them why enough times and you get them to think, at some point they can't defend it anymore. And they're like, I give up. I'm not going to forward this. I'm not going to surface this because people are going to keep asking me why and I'm not going to have a good answer. I read an article that was actually based on a paper by Duke University that the way to spread conspiracies from spreading is to asking the source in your environment, like the whys, asking why enough times.
As opposed to just saying, how could you forward this? It's so wrong. Because then it just puts people on the defensive.
Yeah, don't put them on the defensive. Actually have a conversation with them and engage in dialogue with them. Because it might help them realize how there are some flaws.
You wear multiple hats. So what work is EckMinute doing in this regard? I know that that's your evening job. But in a practical sense, what is your project doing to try to combat misinformation and disinformation and promote media literacy online?
In a practical sense, we're trying to find easy and quick ways to expose people to digital literacy concepts. We're currently at this phase where I've wrapped up my master's, I'm working now, and I'm not in India. So I'm trying to find partners in India who are good and savvy at generating content, like quick videos or clips that are like catchy, and integrating those digital literacy concepts into maybe say a TikTok video that can then be mass forwarded.
In working in India, that's because of your personal background, but is that also just because of just the huge number of human beings that are using these platforms?
It was more personal, but then I realized this is still a great market to start with because of the sheer volume. Yeah.
I'm a little bit curious because you've been working at this very human level, like one person to one person, engage them in an argument or forward them the funny thing that makes them think or reflect a minute or whatever. Stepping back, you're working with one of the biggest social media companies, and as many people as might work on your team, you probably don't have enough to engage with everybody who's spreading wrong things. Where do you sort of balance human work with identifying and mitigating misinformation on a platform when you're working at that scale? Do you rely on readers to identify stuff and flag it? Or do you have other tools that you use to help review? Are there internal guidelines for sort of reviewing, like, this is where it's getting dangerous or harmful?
Yeah, there are very sophisticated ways that Twitter, as well as our peers, identify and detect misinfo. It's a mix of automated signals, like a certain kind of hashtag or tweet is picking up speed and being spread to networks that are not necessarily related to one another, which means you have leakage across networks. Systems start paying attention. Humans are also involved. So we have a lot of review teams who are taught and trained on policy about what to look out for and what to do. And based on the potential for visibility, the potential for harm, the severity level, there are all these aspects of the framework that then determine the action that's taken. Because there's like a range of actions.
The review teams are humans who actually read and review the posts.
Yeah, they read and review posts, yeah.
Does that start by an algorithmic flag that kicks up stuff to their attention?
It's a bit of both. It's flagged by automation. Some of it's flagged by users.
Arushi, thank you so much for being with us on the program today. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And if you would like more information about Arushi's work, you can visit ekminuteproject.com online. That's ekminuteproject.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.